Thank you so much, Suzanne and Anne. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Lynn Curry. My pronouns are she, her. I've been a member of Prairie for about 17 years and have sort of dabbled in different things. So I'm in the Prairie Choir, help out here when I can, and with RE. Basically, if you have a baby to hold, I'm your person. I want to extend a special welcome to any of our visitors today from Shiva Vishnu Hindu Temple and Cultural Center, who are going to be teaching our children about Diwali this morning in religious exploration, and to our guest speaker, Nandi, who you will meet in a few minutes. We welcome you all. Packed house, loving it, to our service, especially those of you who are searching for a spiritual home. Many of us were once too, seeking for something larger than ourselves to which we could belong, a sense of rootedness to hold us as we create meaning together. We do that well here, though not perfectly. In this congregation, we strive not for perfection, see, but for authenticity and connection. Whether it's your first time with us or your 100th time, or probably a lot more than that for a few in our seats, we hope that you'll find here questions that stretch you, people to befriend you, and values that challenge you to join us in loving boldly, living justly, and welcoming openly. I want to welcome, I forgot to tell Orange that she's up first, so sorry, Orange. I'd like to welcome Orange to read our reading by Lee Kinvey.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm Orange Schroeder, she, her. This chalice is for the living, the changing, the becoming. This chalice is for losing the script of your life, the chapters about who you are in other people's stories. This chalice is for the lost GPS that was supposed to show you how to get where you expected to go. This chalice is for skipping the directions and coloring outside the lines, painting not by number, but by silence, by wild abandon with a brush you made yourself from light deep inside, startling, vivid, a new voice that already knows you. Finally, a true story.
Thank you, Orange. That was very good punting. our opening music today, presented by Dean and Ron, is number 188, Come, Come, Whoever You Are. I guess the words are going to be projected on the screen, or you can follow along in the green hymnal, whatever's most comfortable. Please stand in body and spirit as you're willing and able.
Raise this and get to the right music. Yeah, unison and then three times. So what we're going to do is go through this song once with you so you can kind of learn it, and then we'll sing it three times. It's actually a round so that I would, as after we go through that first time that we all sing together, I'd like the people on Ron's side of the room to sing with me. And then after I get all the way through to that item number three, Dean's side of the room should join in at the beginning of that piece, Come, Come, Wherever You Are. Okay? So let's do this to get used to it, to learn it, and then we'll do it as a round. Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Come, yes, again, come. Thank you. Now I'm going to start my side of the room, and you people over here, watch for Dean's signals. Come, come, wherever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of meaning, ours is no caravan of despair. Come yet again, come again. Come, come, wherever you are,
Wanderer, worshiper, lover of living, ours is no caravan of despair. Come yet again, come last time. Come, come, whoever you are. Wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Come yet again, come.
Ours is no caravan of despair.
A plus all around. Really good.
Well done. That sounded awesome. For those of you who have been here before, the all indications are that it is time for our story of all ages. The story today is The Light Within You by Damita Mulani Mera, illustrated by Kamal Nair. It's going to be read today by Karen Deaton, our Director of Religious Exploration. And of course, kids and adults and kids at heart are welcome to gather around the front to listen to the story. I'll just say now, since they're still kind of gathering, when the story for all ages is done, we will be singing our youth out. The lyrics are in the order of service, so be ready, and we'll be accompanied by Ron for that.
So our story today is about somebody who's living far away from where they started out in their life. And at the beginning of the story, you know, it's kind of hard sometimes if you are different from the people around you, right? Have you ever been somewhere where you felt like you just didn't quite fit in? This story is about a girl who moved to our country from India, and she was sad because her friends didn't know very much about her holidays. And today in RE, we're going to be learning about the holiday that she talks about, because all religions have wisdom and beauty to share with us. So we're going to be learning about Diwali. And this book is called The Light Within You. Dia was ready. She was going to visit her grandma in India for Diwali, the festival of lights. Diva hadn't seen Nani in a long time, not since they moved from India. Now Dia's family had moved again to another city, another new school. Her classmates didn't know much about Diwali, and they wondered why she was going away for 3 whole weeks. Dia missed India. She missed Nani. Nani was her best friend in the whole world. Why did she have to live so far away? Dia had done the math. It was 7,850 miles to get to India. A 24-hour journey, 1 whole day. After 2 cars, 2 planes, and a rickshaw ride, they were finally here at Nani's house. Dia saw a flash of gold and then ting, ting, ting. Nani emerged, waving a prayer bell. Welcome home, she said. And we see here things that they're doing to welcome them. Nani's house was filled with old photos. Dia ran her hand over the frames. Time to make new memories, Nani said. Let's go shopping. Chalo! At the bazaar, Dia marveled at the displays. Nani beamed and bargained. Your granddaughter is here, everyone said. She looks just like you. In Dia's new town, no one looked like her. Here with Nani, everything felt familiar and warm and comforting. Dia wished she could stay here forever. Time to make Diwali sweets, Nani said. In the kitchen, Dia's taste buds tingled at the smell of ghee. You'll get to smell ghee this morning. The sizzle of sweet jalebi, and a snowstorm of coconut laddus, which we're going to make this morning too. Nani showed Dia how to roll the laddus while Dia told her all about her new school. Making new friends can be hard, Nani said. Maybe I should make some laddus for my classmates, Dia thought. You know, when things are tough on the outside, it helps to brighten your light on the inside, Nani said. Dia looked surprised. There's light inside me? We all have an inner light, Dia. When you believe in yourself, your light shines bright and darkness fades away. Dia watched the city sparkle. Rainbow-colored rangoli brightened wide-open doors, waiting to welcome aunties and uncles, friends and neighbors, and perhaps even a goddess or two. Dia admired Nani's saris in rich silks and satins. She twirled in the lehenga made just for her. Together, they sparkled in sequins, pink and gold, beautiful bindis, and jingle-jangle bangles. My classmates might like some bangles, Dia thought. When the sun sank low, Nani led Dia outside. And now, light of my life, you have the most important job of the day. Dia was ready. Together with Nani, Dia carefully lit little Diwali lamps. Shining Dias, just like my Dia, Nani said. Hundreds of Dias lit up the night. Happy Diwali! Namaste! Come in! Guests arrived in their newest and best clothes, bright, beaming, and radiant. Dia, you've grown so much, they said. Is that what relatives say to you if they haven't seen you for a while? Yeah, always, right? They made a dash for Nani's coconut laddus. Friends, family, and food filled Nani's garden. Fireworks fizzed in the sky. There are fireworks at Diwali. Dia, you and I are like these sparklers, Nani said as their sparklers touched. We share a special connection and light with each other, and we light each other up. Dia felt her inner light brighten. It was the kind of night where everything felt right. But soon, the laughter-filled evening ended with 100 goodbyes. And just like that, Diwali was over. An unsettling silence sneaked up on Dia. Soon she would have to say goodbye to Nani and this place that felt like home. Dia felt her light dim. Nani sat with Dia. Even on this moonless night, the Dias bring light into our world and show us the way. See the whole line of Dias? But they'll be gone tomorrow, Nani. Diwali is more than a festival, Nani said. It's the light within you. Your inner light is your special spark. It will bring you joy and brighten the world around you, too. Nani had saved one last gift for Dia, a box of Dias. Dias for my Dia, Nani said, hugging her tight. Bravely spread love and light wherever you go in the world. Dia glowed. And Dia was ready to go home. See, she has brought all kinds of things for her classmates. She brought bangles and she brought sweets. She brought laddu. She has the coconut laddu that she made. The end.
A fortune comes your way with peace and loving kindness. Go in love.
Let us join our hearts and enter into meditation. Our presenter today is Nandi, who will be discussing decolonizing spirituality. Nandi is a health equity and well-being consultant at UW-Madison's Office of Equity, Inclusion, and Employee Well-Being. Nandi has been working in the fields of social justice and holistic health for over a decade and has a background in cross-cultural research, teaching and training using experiential techniques. Nandi earned a Bachelor of Science degree in psychology and biology and is also a UW-Madison alum, where they earned their Master of Science in Counseling Psychology. Nandi grew up in the American South and brings their lived experience as a queer, trans person of color.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for inviting me into your space. Oh, thank you. Yeah, especially on Diwali weekend. That was so cool to be able to hear a bit of the story. There's actually so many stories and fables associated with the holiday because it lasts like a week. But yeah, so again, my name is Nandi. I use any pronouns. So she, her, they, them, he, him are all good. You literally can't get it wrong. Yeah, I also am a licensed psychotherapist here in Wisconsin. So I approach a lot of my work through a mental health and also holistic health lens. I've worked in a lot of different areas of healthcare, as well as mental health care. So that's kind of the approach that I take to a lot of this work. Wanted to go to the next slide. So first, I just want to take a moment here to acknowledge the history and the communities and the ancestors of this place, the ancestors who are walking with you all here today, as well as any ancestors that you may call upon in your life, past and present, especially as stewards of all the spiritual paths we walk. And one of the ways that we can engage in that work is through experiential learning. And what that is just a really fancy way to say storytelling. So now that the kids are mostly gone, we're gonna just get into a little storytelling, just us. So I know it was Diwali last week and also it was Halloween. So I know with everything going on, it's still a very spooky time. So this is just a little bit of a spooky story that my father would tell us growing up. It's not too scary, so don't need to brace yourself too much. So my father is from a really remote village in South India, in Karnataka, and this story is from that village. So it follows the experience of this young guy. He's like in his teens and he's out working in the fields. That's like outside of the village. So there's like the village main, and then there's always like a temple right outside the village to kind of like protect the perimeter. And then it's like just farm fields everywhere. So he's out there working, and you know when you're like kind of on a roll with work and you just like completely lose track of time? So this is happening to this guy, and it gets to be the end of the day and it's like getting darker and darker. And then he looks up and he's like, oh, the sun's going down. I should get home. So he's walking home, and then he comes across this lone sheep. It's just all by itself. And he's like, oh man, like it must have gotten away from my neighbor's flock. I should get it to go home. Otherwise, you know, there's tigers out there. Like it's probably going to get, it's going to become someone else's food. So he's trying to like urge it along. And this sheep is very stubborn. It is not moving. So he's like, whatever. And he just picks it up and puts it over his shoulders. And he just continues walking home with the sheep over his shoulders. And he, as he's approaching the village temple, the sheep starts to get heavy. And it's He's going closer. It's getting heavier and heavier and heavier. And just as he's about to reach the temple, this sheep just starts feeling like lead. And so right before he starts feeling his knees about to buckle under the weight, he like puts it down. And then, you know, when you put down something heavy, you got to like stretch a little bit. So he's doing that. And then he looks down and the sheep is gone. Like it just disappeared. And he's looking, it's nowhere. But it's also, you know, this is out in the country. There's not like electricity or like streetlights or anything like that. So he also can't really see very well. And it's really pretty dark at this point. So he's like, okay, whatever. Like, I'm just going to go home. And so he gets home and he's telling his mom about this experience. And you know, when you're like telling an elder something and they're just like giving you that look, like, you tried that. Like, I've been there before. So after he tells his mom this story, she's like, you know, that wasn't really a sheep, right? And he's like, what? She says, that was a demon. And what happens is, these demons, they prey on people who are working too hard and they're isolated and all alone, and they target them and they try to get you to sneak them into the village, and then they start sowing doubt in the community and wreaking havoc. And what happened was, you know, the village and your family and your connection to the temple is so strong that it protected you. And it protected all of us. So growing up, you know, this was kind of just like a little ghost story, just like a little spooky story that, you know, my dad would tell us before bed. Thanks, Dad. But it really wasn't until I was older that I understood the message a bit more. And the first lesson here is that threats to our well-being and our safety may often appear innocent and unassuming. Secondly, working harder and longer than is necessary opens us up to these threats to our well-being and can lead us to feeling isolated and unwell. And lastly, nothing that must hide in the dark has any true authentic power of its own. And having a strong community, good health, and a mindful attitude are all protective factors against any threats to our well-being. Now, there's a lot of different aspects to well-being, but today I want to talk specifically about spirituality, and in particular, decolonizing spirituality and what that means. Decolonizing spirituality is a journey to unravel and rebuild, to learn, relearn, and unlearn. And I want to invite us to examine the spiritual practices that we hold, the values they teach us, and the ways that we engage in them. Decolonizing spirituality is a complex, transformative journey, and I really hope that this conversation can be a step towards fostering genuine, respectful, and liberated practices. Next slide. So let's first start with understanding what colonization has done to spirituality. Next slide. So colonization as a force did not just occupy lands and resources, it also occupied our minds, our cultures, and our souls. Traditional Indigenous and ancestral spiritual practices were suppressed and even erased, replaced with dominant systems that often negated local customs and beliefs. For many cultures, it wasn't just a religious shift, it was a removal of our connection to the land, our communities, and our identities. And colonization fostered hierarchies, treating certain religions and philosophies as superior while labeling others as primitive or superstitious, or at worst, promoting devil worship. And while overt colonization of spirituality may not look like how it did even like 50 years ago, a lot of these ideas and beliefs still persist today. And many of us might unconsciously carry spiritual ideas rooted in colonial frameworks, which can reinforce these structures of supremacy, perpetuate cultural appropriation, and alienate us from our own spiritual paths. So, next slide. In our search for true meaning and connection, many of us have turned to Indigenous or non-Western spiritual practices, and it's human nature to seek wisdom, but we have to tread carefully here. Next slide. Appropriation happens when elements of a culture are taken and used out of context, often for profit or social capital, without acknowledgement of their origins or respect for their sacredness. For example, practices like smudging or yoga or even some types of meditation practices can sometimes be completely stripped of their cultural roots and sold as lifestyle products. And this detachment can dilute the power of these practices, disregarding the communities who created and sustained these practices for thousands and thousands of years. Appreciation, however, involves a deep respect, context, and reciprocity. It means not only learning about the spiritual practices of another culture by actively supporting and uplifting those communities that own those traditions, and we can really gather around and try to support these practices in a more meaningful way. We could ask ourselves, are we truly honoring the original teachings, or are we kind of picking and choosing what suits us? Are we contributing to these communities, or are we just taking from them? Here on the screen, you can see a number of examples of why and how certain spiritual practices may be closed. They might have started as closed to begin with, or they might have been closed due to appropriative practices. Next slide. One really powerful approach to decolonizing our spirituality is to start by reconnecting with our own roots. Many of us have ancestral traditions that we may not be fully aware of, either due to personal, familial, or historical disconnection. And by learning about our own cultural heritage, we not only honor our own ancestors, but also cultivate practices that resonate deeply within us and reduce the likelihood of appropriating from others. Because the thing is, a lot of Europeans came to America to practice spiritual freedom. That's the core of the reason why a lot of us are here. But they left these traumas fleeing from exclusion, persecution, and poverty. And many arrived here poor, destitute, and sick. Our European ancestors' trauma ended up breeding more trauma. And what I tell people is that trauma is one of the most potent and transmissible diseases out there. It's not the flu, it's not COVID, it's trauma. It's passed on to other people to our family members, to our friends, to the plants, the animals, and the earth itself. And whiteness as it exists in America was a way of uniting various European people into a power structure that benefited them by oppressing other people. By surrendering their culture and their ethnicity, our ancestors were able to get access to things that other groups didn't. And this matches up with stories almost every white family has of one of their generations refusing to speak their mother tongue, refusing to talk about anything that happened back home, or being humiliated that their parents or grandparents didn't assimilate into American culture fast enough. And this is categorized under the umbrella of America's melting pot. And it's often looked back on almost nostalgically instead of as the collective trauma that it actually was. Assimilating into whiteness was forced upon many people, but was a choice that European people made. And I think a lot of us have forgotten that. And this collective assimilation created a hole, a void in our hearts. And this homogenization didn't just create a new culture as maybe some people intended it to, but a void for hate. Because if you're someone who identifies as white, you might have felt this feeling without even having a name for it. It's this existential dread, this nihilism in which you feel detached from time, history, and your place in it. And what you may have been told by people in power is that that void gets filled with things. Our capitalist society will tell you that the next new shiny thing, the next new trending culture is what's going to do it for you. And it might, but only fleetingly. So exploring your own ancestral traditions can be incredibly empowering and is inherently part of decolonization work. And it can be really beautiful and life-changing. And it also might bring some discomfort as we encounter our own histories of colonization and loss. This journey invites us to reweave threads that may have been broken, mending these connections with practices that are authentically our own. We often discover that many Indigenous and traditional cultures, despite their differences or despite their place in the world, share a lot of similar values around community, respect, and balance with nature. For example, I am of mixed race. My father is South Indian and my mother is German and Irish. And over this past summer, I visited my ancestral lands of Ireland and learned about the history, culture, and traumas of my ancestors. And part of it was really beautiful. And also, part of it was really hard. I had to reckon with the privilege that my Irish ancestors had to flee and mourned for the many people that they left behind. So, how can we participate in open practices mindfully and meaningfully? Next slide. I always promote the research, reconnect, and revitalize model, aka knowledge, awareness, and skills. So take time to explore the history, practices, and values that your ancestors used to heal and connect to the divine. And this is connecting to the divine prior to colonization. And think about how you might incorporate these practices into your life. Consult with others who are in the culture or community and find culturally relevant alternatives to practices that you might be interested in. Connect with others who are on this journey. And finally, practice mindfulness. Avoid the capitalism trap. Avoid hopping on trends too quickly. And when incorporating a new practice into your life, pay attention to how you feel before and after. Next slide. Because decolonizing spirituality requires not just knowledge, but also practice, and with practice, humility, it's essential to hold ourselves accountable for the ways that we engage spiritually. Next slide. So here are just a few principles that we can use to guide us. First is reflect and educate. So educate ourselves on the origins and significance of any spiritual practice we engage in. Reflection also means questioning whether our use of a practice is genuine or merely convenient. Next, be willing to take a step back. If a particular practice doesn't necessarily belong to our culture, or if we're unsure about its usage, it's okay to just pause, even temporarily, and just take a step back. Some practices just aren't necessarily meant for all people, and there's no harm in acknowledging that. Next, offer gratitude and support. When you do engage in a practice from another culture, offer gratitude, show appreciation through action, support Indigenous communities, donate to their causes, amplify their voices, and respect their requests regarding how their tradition should or shouldn't be used. Next, engage with reciprocity. Many spiritual traditions are rooted in reciprocity and giving back. If we're going to engage with certain teachings or practices, it's really essential that we find ways to give back to those communities that have stewarded those practices. And lastly, acknowledge that it's a lifelong process. Decolonizing our spiritual paths is a journey, not a destination. Be patient with yourself, be kind, and with humility and openness, we can continue to learn and grow together. Next slide. So as we draw to a close, I want us to just imagine a world where our spiritual practices honor our unique roots, respect other traditions, and connect us more deeply to ourselves, our communities, and the earth. As we work to decolonize our spiritual paths, we may find that our spiritual lives expand, becoming more nourishing and real. And we might find that by relinquishing practices that don't necessarily align with our roots, we make space for practices that deepen our relationship to ourselves and our ancestors. Finally, I invite each of you to consider these couple questions. First, what does decolonizing spirituality mean for you personally? And next, what practices or beliefs do you hold that might require examination? So essentially, how can you cultivate a practice that is authentic, respectful, and life-giving both for you and your community and the communities that that practice may come from? To end, this work is not easy, and it often requires us to confront discomfort, but in that discomfort lies the opportunity for profound growth and healing. By consciously decolonizing our spiritual paths, we ultimately aim to move closer to a world where spirituality is a force for unity, liberation, and true respect. Next slide. And I think, yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Nandi. Now is the time our community dedicates for discussion around the focus of today's service, relying on our covenant of good relations as a guide to ensure all voices are welcomed and relationships are valued. We have about 10 minutes for discussion, which we're going to end at about 10:55. Please go ahead and form a line on the sides, either side of the room, and take turns coming up to the podium. Or if you are not comfortable coming up, please raise your hand and someone will bring a microphone to you. Please introduce yourself with your name and your pronouns if you would like. And those on Zoom, please type them into the chat to have your comment read aloud.
Thanks so much for sharing a lot of what you shared there.
I was reflecting a little bit about my own perceptions of how some of these systems evolve. You know, we had the story this morning about a family that moved away from where their ancestral community was. And over the course of the last couple hundred years, particularly in the US, there's been a whole lot of that. There's a lot of mobility that people have to a point where you no longer have homogenous cultures, right? And so we see, it used to be that your town, everybody went to the same church, for example, in some places. And given the diversity that we're experiencing, I've attributed a lot of that diversity to some of the breakdown in the importance of spiritual community and these types of institutions. How do you see the relationship between that kind of loss of cohesion inherently due to diversity versus due to what you're describing as colonization?
Yes, thank you so much for that question. I think what, and let me know if I'm not answering the question that I heard too. I always try to start like any individual conversation that I'm having with someone who's like concerned about some of those things, that the human species are inherently nomadic. We have always been traveling everywhere. I mean, that's how our species got to be at virtually every part on the planet. And a lot of, and you know, food is a really good example, right? So take tomatoes. When we think about tomatoes, a lot of people think, oh, Italian cuisine. Tomatoes didn't originate in Europe at all. That came from, you know, North and Central and South America, but eventually became so incorporated into the cuisine that now it's just inherently Italian, right? So the beauty of us partaking in other cultures is just being human. I think where colonization has come in is through the history of saying, you know, a particular people coming in and saying, what you're doing is wrong, and making that practice illegal. So that would be like, you know, Italians coming to, you know, Mexico, for example, and saying, okay, tomatoes are outlawed. Right. Which didn't happen, but you know, that's like an example. So instead of a, you know, cultural appreciation of like, we love tomatoes so much, we also want to grow them here and use them in our cuisine. That's appreciation, right? But where the appropriation comes in is like, well, the way we use tomatoes is good, and the way you use tomatoes is bad, and we're going to make that illegal. So that's kind of like an example that I give, and how we can kind of differentiate between like, is it negative? Is it colonization? Or is it like appreciation and just being genuinely interested in another culture? Is that?
Kent Wenger, he, him. I just kind of wanted to ask about yoga as one of the things that you gave in as example. Because like my feeling is that that's a really complicated thing, because there's sort of such a range of, you know, I've taken yoga classes, and you know, there have been sort of more or less spiritual aspects to it versus, you know, like I've had physical therapists say, oh, pigeon pose is really good for stretching your hip, and there's you know, like such a range of how you, I guess you could say, yoga is sort of incorporated or whatever. So I just wondered if you could expand on that a little bit.
I could give a whole talk on this. Yes, yoga is a really complex and very ancient practice. I don't know if there was like a very, very specific question, but generally I'll just say yoga, the way that it's practiced in the West is asana, or like the physical piece. So in that sense, it has been inherently stripped of all of the other aspects of what yoga is. You know, you might hear an instructor say, like, you know, yoga is not just physical, it's a philosophy. And that's true, but then you don't see it actually being practiced. For example, like Ayurveda is inherently part of yoga. Ayurveda is like the whole medical system. There are Ayurvedic doctors that like go to like 4 to 6 years of school in India to, and they're, you know, an official like licensed doctor that, you know, has to learn about all the different body systems, and being a yogi is inherently about understanding all aspects of the mind, body, and spirit, not just the body. So I think that's, you know, something to just keep in mind when, you know, and doing yoga is fine. It's just, if you acknowledge that it's might be a little more complex than when you might take a yoga class at a studio in town, then, you know, that's just something to keep in the back of your mind.
I'm going to pop up really quickly because the program committee has said I will never be allowed to do this job again if I let the conversation happen for more than a minute. So I can allow one more speaker. I'm very sorry. But Nandi, are you're planning to kind of stick around? Okay, yeah. Awesome. So hold your questions if, you know, and collect with one another about your questions and bring them up afterwards. So
sorry, everybody else.
Well, now I'm kind of embarrassed because I didn't intend to be the last person. I am a returning member of UU. I've been gone due to divorce and illness for 10 years. Thank you for taking me back. I'm so happy to be here. My name is Beth Butler. I'm an anthropologist by education and an IT person because that was where I could get a job. I am strongly discouraged by the anthropological community at ever studying my own roots. I'm allowed to study anybody else's roots, but not my own. So when the pandemic started, I took the time, since as a person with autoimmune disease, I was completely locked in. So I started examining my roots because I had this glorious time to do so. I am a product of a family that abandoned their Cherokee tribal nature because of the Indian schools. And so we were raised white. I am also a product of a Scots-Irish illegal immigrant who married the Cherokee Indian. And we abandoned all identity because in Oklahoma, the Irish were terribly oppressed. My Irish ancestor, it turns out, was not Catholic and was not Protestant. He was the old religion. And in my generation, my family has readopted the old religion. I am a Christo-Druid. So, my question to you is, the part of my family that unfortunately descends from John Calvin tells me I'm in a cult and has rejected me and ostracized me. But I was inspired by what you had to say because of the decolonization idea, because that relates directly to my heritage and to what I've been trying to do since the pandemic started. I'm now an ovate in the bardic tradition. I don't know if you met any druids, but it's quite common in Ireland and England right now. And so I belong to OBOD, the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids. It is a global community of over 30,000 people in 50 countries at the moment. And I don't think I'm in a cult, but I wanted to hear what you had to say about it. Thank you very much.
Now, I won't claim to know about, like, deeply about every single cultural practice. And anyone who says that they are an expert on every single spiritual practice to exist, it's probably like Dr. Oz. You should, like, maybe run in the other direction. But thank you so much for sharing that with me. I really, really appreciate it. And, you know, that's what I tell people all the time, is that decolonization is available to anyone, particularly if you come from a European ancestry. There are really old, powerful, magical traditions that have existed prior to, again, like, homogenization and colonization, and especially in Ireland, like, you know, the people talk about colonization quite a bit. There's a lot of history and a lot of trauma there. So yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the word cult, while has, you know, a lot of meaning, I think that's where you can kind of try to consult with other people who you trust and lean on your community that's outside of that particular community to just give you a bit of a, you know, more balanced perspective on what is going on. And, you know, just check in with yourself, trust your gut. You know, our gut tells us a lot about whether we're safe or not. And, you know, as long as you're, you know, coming from a place of authenticity and, you know, you feel safe in that community, like, that's a really good place to start.
Thank you so much, Nandi. Appreciate it. This quarter, we share our offering with Digs, which I am being reminded today is Porchlight's program that stands for Dwelling Intervention Grants and Sustenance Program. Provides eviction prevention counseling and financial assistance to households facing eviction. I want to thank again Suzanne and Anne for playing for us during the offertory the piece called Slow Airs. like to welcome up Margaret Moses for our closing words.
I'm Margaret Moses, she, her. The closing words are by Betts Weinecke. May we leave this place seeking an uncharted and freely chosen way to wholeness, knowing that we have companions along the way.
And thanks to Ron and Dean for popping up here for our closing music, Our Father by Susan Warner.
Yes, you can. I hoped you would. We're going to do a tune. Can someone help Dean with the mic? We're going to sing a tune that comes from Susan Warner's agnostic gospel music album.
Testing.
Called The Gospel Truth. And it's just something that's fun. And along with the reconciliation and research and things to get adjusted, maybe a little humor will help from some of the pain of some conflicts of culture. So it's called Our Father, the New Revised Edition, the words you have on the flip side of the order of service. And we'll get going and do all right. Yeah, I'm going to start with the chorus and say thanks, Dan. So that you can learn it, and then we'll go back and do the chorus and lead into the verses. So the first four lines there, 1, 2, 3. Thy kingdom come to every nation. Thy will be done in everything we do. Lord, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from those who think they're doomed. Did you catch on to that? It's not tough. So we'll go back and do the chorus, and then we'll move into those verses. Thy kingdom come to every nation. Thy will be done in everything we do. Lord, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from those who think they're you. Lord, send us forth to be of service, to build the schools, to dig the wells, and deliver us from the creepy preachers with their narrow minds and very wide lapels. Thy kingdom come to every nation. Thy will be done in everything we do. Lord, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from those who think they're you. Lord, send us forth to bring compassion to every corner of the world. And please allow for women in the Catholic priesthood, and remind the Pope that it could have been born a girl. Thy kingdom come to every nation. Thy will be done in everything we do. Lord, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from those who think they're you. And deliver us
from politician to drop your name in every speech as if they're your best friend from high school, as if they practice what they preach. I will be done. In every nation, thy will be done in everything we do. Lord, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from those who think they're you. Lord, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from those who think they're you. Amen. 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 Amen.
That was good. Good job.
Nice job. All right, we've got a few announcements. I have actually not looked at the back of the order of service, but usually there's some other ones there too. So be sure to read those. Today, after the service, please stay if you can. Join us for a potluck meal. Everyone is welcome, especially visitors. But visitors, don't be intimidated by the donation basket. It is our treat for you today. We need a bunch of volunteers to set up tables, move chairs, prep food for service, etc. So to make that possible, if everybody who wants to like just chat, catch up, ask questions, please go out into the lobby area. I am the most guilty of that. So if you can keep that in your mind for the next few minutes, that would be really helpful. Today, the Humanist Union Group, we've got a couple different options for lunch, is going to be next door in the Prairie Annex. Starting at 12:30, Professor Mark Safman will present on quantum computers. The nominating committee has announced openings on the Committee on Ministry. Please contact Heidi. I don't think I've seen here. Barbara Fry, raise your hand. Wherever you are now, Mary France or Margaret. Beautiful. Suzanne has an announcement really quickly on the minister search process and some important dates coming up.
Hi, I'm Suzanne. Pronouns are she, her. And apparently I'm the only member of the minister search committee who made it here today. So I get the honors. The Minister Search Committee has a recommendation. We have a candidate that we're recommending for our next halftime minister. Her name is Mary Sue Rougebuck. And she will be doing the presentation next Sunday at our meeting. And we welcome everyone. Please come and hear her presentation. We think she's pretty terrific. Her name is Mary Sue Rougebuck. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll be getting something on Prairie Views tomorrow with a spelling of her name so that you can do some research. So next Sunday, the board is calling a Zoom congregational meeting to be held on Tuesday, November 12th at 7 p.m., to decide if Mary Sue will be our next minister. You will have the ability to come to the Zoom meeting or as an alternative to vote next Sunday after the service by proxy, or you can vote on Tuesday. We are still determining what will happen if someone cannot vote at either one of those events, and an email will go out to everyone about that. Mary Sue Rougebuck has a Master of Arts in Pastoral Theology and is a certified spiritual director with a degree with a certification from St. Menrod College and Seminary. She was the director of religious education at the UU Church of Muckwanago I hope I said that. Did I say that wrong? Oh, okay. I'm not from Wisconsin. Did you guess? Okay. And later head of school for the Montessori Private Academy of Rockford, Illinois. I'm going to put on a different hat. And as the curator of our wonderful little art gallery, I want to thank Pam Gates for the display that she just took down yesterday that everyone enjoyed, and let you know that this wonderful display of handmade furniture is by my husband, John Gernand, who somehow we neglected to put his name anywhere on that wall, which Carl pointed out to me this morning. So in case you were one, most of you know he's a furniture maker, but in case you didn't know, he made all of that stuff. So enjoy looking at it, and he's here to answer any questions.
I just assumed it was a test. So thank you, Suzanne. One more announcement from Chris Porter about, I don't know, something about money.
I'm here to talk about the pledge drive. And I don't have an exact number for you. Sorry about that. But we did tip over $100,000, but we're trying to get to $158,000. And I'm still hoping to get about 25 more pledges. So if you haven't done that, please get them in so that we have a good number for our parish meeting. Thanks.
All right. At this point in the morning, we're going to stop the recording.